You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Words of wisdom this morning are from the Message translation, Matthew 5:43-48. You're familiar with the old written law, love your friend, and its unwritten companion, hate your enemy. I am challenging that. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the energies of prayer, for then you are working out of your true selves, your God-created selves. This is what God does. He gives his best, the sun to warm and the rain to nourish, to everyone, regardless of the good and the bad, the nice and the nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anyone can do that. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. In a word, what I'm saying is, grow up. You're kingdom subjects. Now live like it. Live out your God-created identity. Live generously and graciously toward others the way God lives toward you. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
It is so good to be with you all. I feel very connected to you. You may know that David and I go back quite a ways. As a matter of fact, your pastor was one who took me in when my very first church was South Mountain Community Church. It's a United Methodist, United Church of Christ Federated Church over in the South Mountain area. And when I had to go to the annual conference of United Methodist, I didn't know anybody, and David and his buddy Jeff Proctor Murphy took me in. That's quite a long time ago, and they've been good to me ever since, and I'm so thankful for that relationship. And I also got to go along with my daughter, Kinley, on the youth mission trip last year with the Sierra Service Project. So I do want to just say, I want to echo what was already said, that car wash, I hope you'll support it. It was an amazing experience, transformational. You have the most amazing youth. You should be so proud. And I hope you'll encourage others to participate in that that week. It is hard work, but eye-opening work. And a testimony to the service that y'all are about. You're amazing. And although I wasn't here last Easter, last week, I do feel so connected to you. And I even went ahead and listened to the incredible sermon that your pastor preached last week. And it was amazing, and it proved to me what I knew would be the case. It was a beautiful Easter here at the Fountains. It is a bit unfortunate, though, that this next week, everywhere across the nation, is somehow kind of let up a little bit. There's a letdown right after such a fabulous Sunday, and then all of a sudden, there's this letdown. We are resurrected and transformed last Sunday, and now the lilies are gone. The chairs are not as packed. Triple services are gone for now. Well, I've got to tell you, I'm impressed you made the time change. My churches never could quite do that. It took weeks to figure it out. So we are back to normal, so to speak. Well, maybe a little less than normal. The B team has been called in. I used to call in the B team after Easter. Now I am the B team. Somehow. But anyway. And I got to tell you, the reason for that is, whatever reason, this is one of the lowest attendance Sundays of the year. So pastors take it off, they take a break, go fishing or whatever, except for your pastor, who works all weekend long at a church retreat. Amazing guy. But it kind of gets one to wondering, what was that all about last Sunday? And what is getting back to normal really supposed to mean after we've been transformed and resurrected? If the Easter message is calling us to lead a resurrected and transformed life, what does that resurrected life really look like after Easter? Does it mean you are good to go now and you can take it easy? Or is there something more? Is there something more to that message and a greater call upon our lives? Do you think maybe people got that something more last week and decided, maybe I don't want to experience that message again anywhere, any place? 5 or 6 years ago, I was serving a church in Sedona. Beautiful, beautiful place to live, by the way, if you ever have a chance to do so. And I was asked to person a table at Sedona Red Rock High's school for career day. As a matter of fact, I was to be the representative of all the ministry in that area, and to let the kids come to me and ask me about what a career or vocation looks like in the ministry. It was a beautiful day with the gym absolutely packed, kids lined up behind almost every table that was there. Well, almost every table. You see, I was very moved when two young women came up to me and I said, "Are you interested in the ministry?" And they said, "No, but we felt sorry for you because you looked so lonely. We thought we would stop by." Okay, so I wasn't the hottest ticket on career day. You know what, though? In a way, I'm not so sure anyone would have wanted to be in that line if they really understood our faith. I don't think they'd be jumping up and down to join in if they really could see what our faith is calling us into, let alone would they probably sign up for a lifelong career or vocation. You see, a faith like ours is so beautiful in that it does allow us to see all the beauty and the good in life, all the beauty that is in creation, and that is in every child of God, no exception. But a faith like ours also summons us to keep our eyes open, to see those stress points in human history, the injustices, and not just to see them, but calls upon us to do something about them. It calls us to a new way of living, a transformed life. It also can be just a little demanding. I'm going to correct that. It can be very demanding. So I really wasn't surprised that I was somewhat alone on career day, although I'm still very thankful to the Jewish massage therapist next to me that always had 10, 15 kids in line for trying to get a few of them to go into the ministry. There were no takers. Have you ever just awakened and said to yourself that today I only want to see the positives, I'm tired of all the negatives, I don't want to hear about any problems that are going on in the world, I will not watch the news, and I'm going to stay away from any negative press? Well, that was my goal one day. I was in seminary, and it was during the first Iraqi war, and I was so tired of hearing about terror, and I was so tired of hearing about war. So I went to work that day, ready to let all the concerns of the world just disappear. I wasn't going to even think about them. I was only going to see the positive. And as I walked up to the church, I saw a station wagon. It was a while ago. I saw a station wagon backed up against the main doors of the church. And I went in, and there I saw a lady starting to lift what was, okay, remember it's a long time ago, a huge microwave. You know, they weren't just these little things. They were massive microwaves. And she said she was cleaning them up and repairing them for us. And so I went ahead and offered to help. I carried out that microwave, put it in the back of her station wagon. She reminded me there was another one, and yes, there was. It wasn't as big, still weighed about 900 pounds. I carried it out, lugged it out, got it into the back, and she thanked me, and I closed the hatch, and off she went. And you know, I felt like I had continued the day that I had started off. Not only was I going to keep it positive, I had now contributed to humanity, and the world was a little better place because of me. Well, a couple of hours later, one of our preschool directors asked me what happened to the microwaves, and I shared how the repair lady had been there and she was going to fix them. And that's when she broke the news to me that there was nothing wrong with the microwaves. She had used them earlier in the morning. As a matter of fact, we didn't have a repair lady, and there was nobody that needed to clean them up. OMG. I had just helped a thief steal from the church. I was an accomplice to a crime against my own church. And all I wanted to do was just see the good in the world, see all the positives, and I couldn't even escape it even for an hour. And I was now even a part of all the negativity in this world. I walk into the church to escape it all, and lo and behold, life gets me right at the front doors. But wouldn't it be so great to be able to turn it all off? I think humankind's natural inclination is to try to reduce life to the simplest of terms and want to just kind of create our own little niche and care for just our own personal issues, our own little portion of the world, and not be bothered with anything more. And you know what? The booming churches today have really mastered that to help their flock do just that. but something inside of me just cannot do it. As much as it would be so much easier to teach and preach a message like that, as much as it would probably have made me a much more popular preacher, as much as it would make your preacher here a mega church pastor, I have no doubt about it whatsoever, he's so phenomenal, something is inconsistent with that theology that we hear in the message today. For I hear that faith understanding that calls us to a transformed life, suggesting to us that life is not about just having just for us and having no concerns for the world around us. As simple as that would be, it is not the Easter message that we heard last week. It is not our faith. Instead, our faith confronts us and keeps us from withdrawing and hiding from it all, no matter how good or bad the world is. It's kind of like that man who asked his partner, "Do you think the world's problems are caused by ignorance or apathy?" And the partner replied, "I don't know and I don't care." You see, we are a part of a faith that has acknowledged from its very inception, like we heard this morning in Matthew, that following in the way of Jesus means to see the world as it is and to keep looking at the bigger picture and working for God's reign to come. We are called to know and to care. It even goes back a little bit further to the prophets who beckon us to resist reducing down life to something that makes us only comfortable and capable of ignoring the truth of the world around us. And it says that we can only be part of building up God's future for all if we understand and grasp just what history is doing now and not turning our heads away simply because we don't know or don't want to care or don't have time to figure it all out. So in our scripture this morning, I hear it. I hear it saying, I know you want to reduce life into the neat little box that makes sense to you, one that you can get your arms around and feel like you have control of it. But I have news for you. You heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Wouldn't that be so easy? But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And I hear it saying, I say to you, living a life of faith is much more demanding than most people ever want it to be. Just when you want to shut your eyes to all the other problems of the world, I want you to open your eyes all the more to the world around you. And I hear it saying, yes, I know how satisfying life would seem to be if we could reduce it down to just loving our neighbor whom we know loves us and then forget about everybody else. It would be so easy. But you are called to a greater view of life, of what living life is meant to be. For Easter has called you to a resurrected and transformed life. And I know that it's true probably for most Christians, and that most Christians find different aspects of life unpalatable, even shameful to have to witness. They don't want to witness poverty in a village or a slum, or see the poor or the powerless like your youth will do this next summer and have for all those other years that they've been part of their mission trips, or hear about discrimination, or even have to think about it. They just want to see and hear those parts of the world that they believe brings them the inner peace, a salvation for whatever that means to them, and helps them believe that life is happy everywhere if, in fact, they are happy. And I think those types of people make up about 99% of the human population, about 99% of the churches today. And you know what? That's okay. There's absolutely no judgment upon them. But something, after reading our scriptures, will not let people like me, and most likely like you, believe that that is our calling, or even remotely is the church of the future. Not the church that hears the prophets and sees the injustices in this world, and sees what love means in the life of Jesus, and is truly transformed by his life. Not the church that is called to live out a beautifully demanding faith, an Easter faith that sees hope for the world where all others see only impossibility, and then is willing to help usher in that hope, even to the point of loving your enemies. Try that sometime. Try loving your enemies and tell me that isn't one of the most demanding things that you have ever done in all of your life. So I get why people are not lining up at the career table or packing the churches like yours every Sunday, because it's far easier to pretend that we did not hear it. It's far easier to go somewhere else where you will not hear it, or go somewhere where you will be able to say the church isn't as liberal as perhaps this one is too liberal, whatever that means, or to suggest that it's not spiritual enough, perhaps failing to acknowledge it might be the most spiritual of all. It's far easier. But the church of the future, and the church since day one, has been called to never shut its eyes to the injustices and the struggles of those who do not have the luxury of being able to escape life by turning off the TV or stopping the paper or skipping the news web pages on the internet, or because it's all too depressing just to ignore it all. Because doing those things for them won't make their hunger go away, won't keep their babies from dying, won't stop the gunshots from ringing out at night, won't stop the hatred that is targeted toward them, won't give them water that they need for their journey. Shutting our eyes to the world around us does not change the world. It never has and never will. And we are called to transform and change this world. So there's no doubt about it. There is something very demanding about our faith, something very, very risky. It asks us to look, to see, to feel, to listen, and recognize our connectedness and our interdependence upon one another and with all of creation, and in doing so, to see hope for the future. It is a comprehensive view of life, the only view that looks to the future. It sees the good, the bad, the ugly, all parts of life, all aspects of life, all points of view, the whole world, all the totality of history, all peoples, the whole scope of humanness, all dimensions of society. And it sees the future that God is pointing us toward. It then calls to us and calls us to that future, beckoning us to be part of helping to make right any of the wrongs that humankind in the world has inflicted upon any of God's children or creation. So in the end, we are a people with the freedom to shut our eyes, develop a faith that doesn't comment on the world around us or see the struggles of others or even have to recognize that there's any suffering in society, pretending it doesn't matter. Or we can be that people who accept that call placed before all of us, that of being sensitive to the world around us, acknowledging those wonderful folk and their presence, hearing their stories and struggles, and never ever ignoring the pain and suffering, and being willing to do something about it, and knowing that such a faith does empower us to live and walk in the way of the one who points us to that future where God's creation and creatures will one day thrive together without anyone ever being ignored or denied their place and presence in this world. It is a demanding faith if you choose that latter one. And that faith is calling to you right now, because it is only when God's children answer that calling that it will ever have a chance of coming about. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.